Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Now, the measuring and reporting of carbon emissions by companies in the food industry isn't uncommon. It helps businesses understand where their environmental impacts lie, where they need to reduce emissions most, and helps track their progress towards sustainability. The problem is they don't all measure their carbon footprint in the same way, and that leads to inconsistencies and can make it difficult to compare one company's emissions with another. But we've news of progress among some of the UK's biggest supermarkets, at least. WWF and the charity WRAP have joined forces to create the Retailer Net Zero Collaboration Action Programme. It's a tricky acronym, but it aims to remove the barriers posed by a lack of standardised reporting methods. And 8 supermarkets have signed up. I'm delighted to discuss this with the fantastic Kate Norgrove, Executive Director of Advocacy and Campaigns at the WWF. Hello, Kate. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Stefan. Happy to be here.
Oh, that's fantastic to have you now. Before we talk about the climate action being taken, let's just understand the problem a bit more. I know it's talked about all the time, but I think it bears repeating. How much does the UK food industry contribute to greenhouse gas emissions, and how far are we off our target?
So no one wants the food on their plate to be fueling environmental damage, but the reality is that the global food system is responsible for more than 30% of total climate change emissions and actually is the biggest driver of biodiversity loss. And in the UK, the UK's food system emissions are estimated to be around 35%. And that includes not just the emissions associated with food and drink production in the UK, but also that produced overseas, which makes up about half of the food we consume. So the food we're consuming in the UK, all of that food, including the chicken I might buy down the shops or the beef I might buy in my local supermarket, all of that is contributing to greenhouse gas emissions and to the destruction of nature. And that's a really hard thing to swallow, if you like.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about the targets, because I hear lots of talk about this amongst people in the food industry. Is it possible to have a thriving food industry, feeding a growing population? You know, that food is one of the fundamentals that keeps us alive. Is it possible to do this in a way that doesn't harm the planet in some way? Is it possible to have a net zero food industry?
So all food production is going to have an environmental impact. This is, though, about reducing the size of our footprint to a sustainable level. And that's the key thing in all of this, is that we need to reduce and eliminate emissions wherever possible, and only for the very last mile start to think about offsetting them, because it's not too late and we can move this food system onto a sustainable footing. But to do that, we need to do 2 really critical things. The first thing is that we cannot allow food production to come at the expense of nature. And so that means that we need to invest in a more nature-friendly farming system, both here in the UK, and we need to incentivize that to happen elsewhere through the footprint of our food as well. And that means that we need to do things like tackling deforestation and the conversion of our habitats for the feed that we provide, say, to our animals. The second thing that we really, really need to work on, as is the case in many high-income countries, which the UK is one, is a shift in people's diets. We need to shift people's diets so that we can eat less and better meat and dairy if we're going to put climate and nature targets within reach. And we need to ensure that our farmers and our food producers of all sorts are supported in that shift. That's really, really critical.
Yeah. Now, some might say that talking about the measurement of CO2 emissions is the most boring subject on the planet. But I think it's absolutely fascinating. And the key to this is that you can't tackle a problem like CO2e emissions without measuring the problem first. You can't tackle it. It's a data-driven problem. You can't understand the problem without actually understanding what's going on. Now, I've briefly introduced the Retailer Net Zero Collaboration Action Programme. Tricky acronym, let's face it.
Yes.
But if you can explain a little bit more, what are you going to call it? The RUNSCAP? No, it doesn't really quite work, does it?
Internally, we've been calling it the Collaboration Action Programme, but it's part of the retailer's commitment to nature and climate, which was introduced or announced at COP26 in 2021. That's where 5 and now 6 of the UK's biggest retailers have committed to halve the environmental impact of their shopping basket by 2030. And this climate action plan, the CAP or whatever you'd like to call it, is a subset of that. And the efforts there are really around creating more standardised methods of measuring and reporting emissions, and then supporting those retailers, suppliers in implementing those standards. So as you said, it is absolutely critical that we have trusted and robust data. And whilst we don't want perfect to be any of the enemy of the good, it is really important that we have that, because we need to be able to meaningfully analyse and then hold companies to account, both these retailers that are part of the commitment and for their suppliers, for the figures that they report, and create this level playing field for businesses. So you don't get some businesses announcing that they've reached net zero when they really haven't, because none of the data that they've been providing is consistent. And so it's critically important. At the same time, we do know the sorts of actions that need to take place. We do know that we need to look at deforestation in our supply chains. We need to look at the pollution that's impacting on our rivers, both in the UK and in the biggest sourcing areas. And we need to support and then enforce standards where they exist, and introduce them where they don't. So we can get on with a lot of that whilst also working on the standardisation of emissions reporting.
Can you give us some examples of the discrepancies between different standards of measuring and reporting? Are there any sort of glaring problems in the way that different organisations calculate these things?
Well, I think the best thing would be to say is that the situation is already extremely complicated. So any of the retailers in this basket metric have thousands of suppliers, and those suppliers are situated in thousands of different places. Even if there's one small change or difference in the way, even within their supply chains, that those companies then account for their emissions, that's complicated. But then add in a further six or so or more other retailers that are also requiring the same thing from those suppliers, and you get a very, very complex situation where suppliers are having to report multiple times to multiple different people, and you don't end up with the information that you need to make the decisions you've got to make. So it is a really big problem. But as I said, it is also important to just start acting even without the knowledge that you don't have. I mean, one example, if I can think of a good one, is where you get climate reporting that doesn't also measure the impact of nature, which is the impact on nature, which is another additional complication. So, for example, you could get vegetables being grown on peat bogs in Norfolk, for example, that might be labelled organic or not organic, and that's impacting on nature and on climate at the same time. Because peat bogs are an extremely valuable carbon sink.
Yeah.
Or you might get people offsetting or saying that they're offsetting by planting pine trees on peat bogs. And, you know, you might get the emissions reductions from planting a pine tree, but actually you're damaging it in a different way. So it's all these sorts of trade-offs that are very important in this context.
And this relativity is part of the problem, I guess, fundamentally, at the concept of whether or not you can have sustainability labelling at all, which, you know, has to be somewhere, you know, in the near future. And if you don't have a base level by which companies can assess these things, then where do you start?
It's completely meaningless, yeah. I mean, and actually, I would just say that sustainability reporting is one thing, and I think it will come down the tracks, but it's not going to change people's behaviour. Because in the end, or not change at the significant level and the speed we need it to be made at, in the end, those choices need to be made for consumers before they reach a packaging which has a label on it, through an obligation on businesses like the EU are just introducing, for example, to make sure that deforestation isn't embedded in what they import into their supply chains.
It's enormously complex, isn't it? And I guess that's why it's fascinating as well, from my point of view.
Yes.
But also, I mean, one of the extraordinary things about this programme is, you know, that you have managed to get these people to talk to each other. Now, UK supermarkets are bloody famous for being competitive and protective about their IP and everything. Now, who's involved in this, and how difficult was it to get such big rivals to play nicely with each other?
You know, the surprising thing is that actually it was easier than you'd have thought, because they are all facing these same challenges and risks to their supply chains, and it'll be, in the end, cheaper and more effective if they all work together within the law to collaborate to make sure that that's possible.
So they can see a collective benefit.
Yeah, they can see a collective benefit. And the same really applies across the value chain from all of the suppliers. Our hope is that working with these big retailers and the ones that we've got in the Commitment for Nature are Tesco, Sainsbury's, Co-op, M&S, Waitrose and now more recently Lidl. And then with the climate one, we've got Aldi and Morrisons as well. The thing is that by working with those, with 80% of the UK retail market, our hope is that you will also then draw in everyone along the supply chain. And it's now really critical also that we also look at the food service sector as well, because obviously the food service sector plays a big role, not just in procuring food for all of us when we go to hospitals or schools, but also has a big impact on particularly the diet aspect of things.
Would it have just been a lot more easy to have set up blockchain properly to actually function with the food industry?
That sounds like an interesting idea. Tell me more.
Then all the information has to be, it has to be doing exactly what you're doing. You've got to standardize everything to be able to report and to be able to give that data. We've been talking about blockchain for a long time. It's never come, not yet, but maybe that will take over all of this.
I think there's a place for better technology to support this sort of data sharing. But I also think in the end, it's quite easy to just go for the sexy, new, interesting, big data things. Whereas actually what is really needed is the human collaboration to make it possible.
Yeah. Now, this program builds upon the WWF's Retailers Commitment for Nature group, another great acronym, and RAP's Courtauld 2030. Now, what are both of these commitments and how does the Retailer Net Zero Collaboration Action Program relate to them?
Yeah, so WWF and Tesco came together in 2018 with this shared ambition to halve the average environmental impact of the UK shopping basket. And when we came together in 2018, we really recognised the need for Tesco to support others to come on board with that same systemic change for the reasons we talked about, really, that it'll be easier, more cost effective and more supportive of all the suppliers and farmers that are along the retail chain. Building from that partnership between Tesco and WWF, we created the WWF basket, which is an easier acronym or phrase to use. We call it the WWF basket all the time, which sets out a series of outcomes and measures to drive down and measure, as we said, these environmental impacts across the seven areas. So climate, deforestation and land conversion, agriculture, marine, packaging and food waste. And then in 2021, we got five other retailers, including Lidl, to sign up to that same commitment to work with us on that basket. And the interesting thing about it is that for an NGO, we are both on the outside and the inside in this experience. So we're holding retailers to account, pushing them to go further, giving some supporting and enabling guidance, and being a neutral convener of a group, which, as you said, is famously very competitive. We're also on the outside working with NGO partners who are pushing both the retailers and government to do a whole lot more and to do it faster. So that's been a really interesting position to be in and one that I've learned a ton from. It's one of the reasons I came to work at WWF when I did in 2019. The RAP Courtauld commitment is one part of that whole. So the focus of this basket is not to recreate something that's already in position or to create another acronym or another group of people that are doing things, but actually to use what's in existence already. So the Courtauld commitment was one of those, which was an agreement to tackle food waste, packaging and water stress. So the Courtauld commitment, building on that and making sure that that's even better, is one part of a couple of the pillars of the overall basket. But there are other people we're working on, say, for example, deforestation and conversion, for example.
Yeah. Now, there are two phases in carrying out the programme. Is that right? First one starts this year and the second in 2024. How are you dividing this up? What's the plan of action for the different phases and why split it into two stages?
So it's really about making sure that we, as you said, get some of it right first. So get the actual reporting and data right. And then also then help support our retail sort of suppliers, et cetera, to do the right thing and support them to do the right thing rather than demanding straight away with no support from them. So by the end of this first phase of work, we'll want to see retailers define this roadmap of collaboration in the short to medium term. And then we want to have seen a full clear path forward with specific action areas to deliver against those emissions measurement targets.
And to see
targets.
If they can, I guess. What's possible within that.
Yeah, but the important thing is to create really some short-term targets, because as we know, retailers need to deliver now. And the risk is that, you know, we set sort of ambitious 2024 targets, but actually without the near-term work on those, then nothing ever happens. So part of this basket is going, well, what are you going to do in 2024? What are you going to do in 2025?
Now, at the moment, you've got 8 leading retailers taking part, but some aren't. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's enough? Are you worried that there's not enough of the industry taking part in this? Or do we have enough to make an impact?
I think we do. I mean, the 8 retailers involved in the climate action program that we were talking about represent 80% of the UK grocery sector. So if we can crack that data challenge and have them consistently measuring climate impact of their products along their supply chains, the potential for impact in the UK is really substantial. And we think that it will be a huge incentive if we can do that for other retailers to join and to drive the changes through the whole supply chain. What we'd like to do is encourage other retailers to align with that. But I think given that the majority of their suppliers, if we've got 80% of the retail market aligned behind it, will want to be doing that anyway, so that the demand will come from them. I think what's
pretty
also,
good start, let's face it.
Yeah, it's a pretty good start. And we've got 6 in the basket. I mean, we'd really like to encourage other retailers to join the broader basket, because that's including action across sustainable agriculture, packaging, deforestation and conversion, etc., a number of different areas. But even that is 60% of the UK's retail market. So it's not too bad.
Yeah.
What we really need, though, is some policy stability from government in this area to support the creation of this level playing field. Because like I said, it shouldn't really be up to consumers when you go down to a local KFC to know, or even a local chicken shop. I live on a road with lots of chicken shops on it. It shouldn't be up to the consumer to make sure that deforestation isn't in the food that you're eating. It should just not be coming in the first place. So another of our ambitions is with this large group of retailers, the government will be able to see that they're taking action, and that actually some of the action that's needed is not possible unless the government also responds. So look in the EU deforestation law, for example, they're way ahead of the UK. We ought to be creating the same thing to make a level playing field for everyone on deforestation.
Yeah. Now, how big an impact do you hope this will have on overall emissions for the UK food industry? I appreciate that obviously measuring, getting to the measurement is part of it, but do you have sort of targets? Do you have a target impact that you hope you will have?
Yeah, well, the UK food system as a whole, as I said, is responsible for the equivalent of 35% of the UK's territorial emissions. So if 80% of the UK retail market, which covers a large portion of that 35%, were to take action, it could be extremely impactful. And the fact that we're talking here about scope 3 emissions, which, to remind everyone, it means all of the emissions associated with producing the food that we consume through supermarkets in the UK, also including the food that you import or one imports from abroad, that's really, really significant. Up until recently, food companies have been focusing on scope 1 and 2, which are the direct emissions. And that's like something like 3% of the total emissions. We've got to look at scope 3
bit.
Emissions if we're going to do anything. Yeah.
Now, is this a model? Last question. Is this a model that can be replicated across the entire industry? We're looking at retailers at the moment, but and I appreciate what you say, that scope 3 is specific to them. But, I mean, presumably down the entire chain, we need to standardise measurements. Do producers, manufacturers, suppliers and retailers all need to adopt the same methods for measuring emissions?
They absolutely do. I think what's even more interesting, if I can add to that, is this model of collaboration, I think, needs to be replicated, not just for retailers, but food service industry, for key supply areas, and even outside the food industry, because I think without this level of collaboration along supply chains, we're never going to be able to tackle scope 3 of all sorts. I mean, look at heat, look at energy, look at all the areas of our emissions in the UK. There are businesses along a supply chain that need to tackle their emissions and their impact on nature. So it's absolutely critical that we look at this way of working. To address the climate and nature crises, we need a clear picture of what the impacts are across the whole food system. And that means at every stage of the supply chain that we're measuring climate and nature impacts. To do that, we need a totally different model of collaboration. And I think the WWF basket gives one good example of how to do that.
Fantastic. Well, Kate Norgrove, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Now, we'd like you to join us in our new initiative, Sustainable Food Week, where we're celebrating the influential people changing the future of food. There are a number of ways to get involved. We've got a digital digest, an in-person forum, and podcast opportunities. It's happening between the 18th and 24th of September. But if you want to be involved, you need to act now. Find out more on the Food Matters Live website or email us at info@foodmatterslive.com. And thank you so much for listening.